My name is Alexis Marshall from Daughters, and this is my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Being realistic.
As the story grows.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it. Boom.
Welcome back to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name's Trav, and I am getting the opportunity to talk to Lex from Daughters tonight. Lex, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
It's nice to be here.
Thanks for the tour of your house.
It's been great. Sure, no problem.
You said you're currently living just outside of Philly, or no, you're in Philly.
No, I mean, it's like 10 minutes to downtown there from here, so.
Right.
But not really in Philly. I mean, the mail says Sheldonham, but
right. But you're packing up your life, and you're heading home.
Yeah, going away. Well, sort of home.
Yeah. Why did you wind up in Philly? Out of curiosity.
My partner, my wife, person, she got a really good job opportunity out here.
Gotcha.
So we came out here for a bit and, you know, went with that. I just think we don't care about the community, I suppose. It's kind of weird to be out here in the suburbs where we don't know anyone at all. And we don't, we're not part of anything. We're just sort of here being like grown-up, white grown-ups in the suburbs without child. So
it's boring as shit.
I mean, if we were more prepared for it, maybe it would have been all right. If we had grown up here, I'm sure it would have been great, but
right.
I think coming out here,
What does she do?
She's really smart and talented, and she graduated from RISD and went to Penn State and did all this crazy stuff.
Right.
So she was designing web and interior houses and what do you call it?
Oh no, I asked you.
I know, right? It's you're designing what do you call it? Homes
interior design?
Interior design, I guess. Yeah, I suppose. Is that it?
Like,
is that the right term?
Like, does she lay out the house or does she decorate the house?
Right, she does the layout and all that business.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what that's called.
I don't know either. I should have asked her at some point.
I don't know. That explains why she was able to help you set up Skype.
No, that she. I didn't ask her. She had to find the headphones. That's why it took so long.
Here, here.
Had she helped me, we would have done this a lot earlier.
Fair enough. All right, cool. All right, so you're heading home. Well, you said not really home, but you're moving. Where are you moving to?
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. And you're from Providence, right?
I was born in Bridgewater, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And I lived all over in Brockton and Norwood and several other towns.
Right.
And I moved to Providence in 98, I think.
Okay.
And I lived there up until just this summer we left, this past summer. But I lived in Providence a long time. I moved around a lot as a kid, and I hated it. I hated moving. I hated always being the new kid where I was living. Always the new kid at school or whatever. So when I was 18 and I moved to Providence, I decided that I'm a grown up. I am living here on my own. I'm not going anywhere. And then I spent like 20 years in the same like 2 mile radius on the west side of Providence, where I refused to leave even that side of the city to move anywhere else. So, because I you know, I kind of finally had control of what I was doing or where I was living.
Why did you move? Why were you moving around so much as a kid?
My parents were never really together.
I see.
Yeah, my mother kind of did her best taking care of me, so it involved a lot of different apartments and renting rooms in people's houses and things like that. So you know, you kind of end up doing that. And she was so young. My mother was 18 when I was born, so she was just a kid and she was trying to figure it out. My dad wasn't really around and he wasn't much of a help when he was. So so there was a lot of traveling just out of necessity. My mother didn't have a lot of options. You know, there you go.
Wow, we got deep so early. Wow, pump the brakes, huh? Sorry. Oh, man, I have so much to talk to you about. I'm so excited to talk to you. One of the main reasons why is because I actually use you as kind of a more modern example of a particular vocal style when I refer to, like, when you hear Daughters, when musically Daughters comes out raging like they do, I don't expect the vocalist to sound like they're going to sound. And you come across with a little bit of a snarky, backhanded kind of you have a particular style, which I always liken to Jesus Lizard, but I feel like that's slightly dated because Jesus Lizard hasn't really cranked anything out lately. But I just spoke to Jesse from Ken Mode, and I feel like Ken Mode kind of went in a direction similar to that too. And I got Hell Songs like everybody else did. And I just remember being like, what is the deal with this dude? You know, like this is really interesting stuff. And I knew you had roots with Cancer Conspiracy, and that whole like scene, that whole area, which I don't think I got into until later. That's my thing. Not that the show's about me, but I get into stuff 5 years after it happened. So I'm like late to the game guy. So I got into the whole Providence, Rhode Island, Cancer Conspiracy, Daughters, Junius. I got into that after everybody else knew about it. So it's news to me, and everyone else is like, yeah, dummy, we already knew about that. So I'm just getting to you now.
That's all right. Get there eventually.
Yeah, eventually. But anyway, I want to wind this back and kind of talk about how, like, you were talking about your childhood and moving around and stuff like that. But I want to know, like, how you got involved in this. And I mean, I definitely want to talk about As the Sun Sets and how that all started. So tell me about, like, take me back to like high school when all this stuff started. What were you listening to? What started this off?
I have an older brother from my father. My father has children. And so my mother was very young when I was born. My father was in his 30s.
Okay.
And so he had already had multiple marriages at that point by the time he and my mother were together. They never got married or anything.
Okay.
But so I have an older brother and older sister from my father's first or second marriage. I think a useless footnote that you don't need, but I think that his first marriage, he didn't have any children, but the woman he was married to, she already had a child, a son.
Gotcha.
But so his second marriage, I think he had two children, being my brother, my older brother, and my older sister. And then about 10 years later, he had me with my mother. And then he was, and then that didn't last because he's not a very good fella. So, but
I'm
I'm not laughing.
I don't mean to make
no, sorry. But I kept a relationship, like, you know, I'd see my father on the weekends type of thing. But my brother, who was older than me, was 10 years older than me, was really cool. In the mid 80s, he had his ear pierced and he was a skateboarder and he had friends and they had cool names. Like, he had a friend named Spike.
I thought that was right on. Cool.
And he had a friend that hung around a lot named Ziggy. And my brother was really into Agnostic Front and Corrosion Conformity and DRI and bands like that. So when I was six, I was exposed to you know, punk and like early hardcore and early New York hardcore.
Wow. Yeah, you were.
Yeah. So that was really great for me. But I had a neighbor there that was really into like Manowar and shit like that.
Right. Power metal. All right.
Power metal and stuff. So I was really into, yeah, like a lot of power metal in that. Okay. And then, my mother was a big Cure fan in the 80s.
Okay.
And my father listened to, you know, like Waylon Jennings and Arlo, okay. Arlo Guthrie and stuff like that. So
right.
there was just a lot of music going on. And
it's funny how you can thread Agnostic Front to Waylon Jennings, and it's kind of not that far removed.
Yeah, it's all like heard it in the same day too, you know.
It kind of all makes sense though, yeah, that's in the same record, yeah, collection, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of great shit. You know, my brother would have cool, like he would have cool bootleg videos of like Alice Cooper, like, okay, you know, performances like cutting his head off and all this really great shit. So,
right.
And he played guitar and he used to get nosebleeds. My brother would, I don't know if my brother did a lot of cocaine at the time. He might have, and that might have been the reason he got so many nosebleeds. But he would put blood on everything. He had like white, he would have white shoes, white high tops, and he would put blood all over. He would give himself a nosebleed and he would put blood on his high tops and all his shit. And his guitar strap had blood on it, and it was just like fucking really gross. And
that's
cool.
Badass though.
Yeah. So there, I got exposed to a lot of different music, growing up, and it stayed with me. So, you know, and nothing ever seemed, I don't think I ever grew out of anything. Nothing ever seemed lame, or I never got bored because there was just so much. I understood at a young age that there was more music than I'd ever be able to hear.
Yeah.
So I just did my best to just try to hear as much as I could, even when I was a kid.
My God, that was before the internet. Holy shit.
Yeah, it wasn't easy.
Now it's like, you know, 700 new bands a day. Ugh, what do you do?
Yeah, there's so much bullshit to comb through at this point, you know,
right,
that it's harder to find really good music.
Yeah, right on. Because you have access to everything ever.
Yeah.
So,
there's so much shit. There's just like this massive amount of crap.
Yeah, it's a lot of weeding.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. It's coming into focus now. What? How old are you?
I'm 37. I just turned 37 this month.
Well, you're 37. That's 4 years behind me. So if you were listening to that stuff, that would have been like mid to late 80s ish. Yeah. We're talking about.
Yeah, mid to late 80s. Yeah.
Right on. How much? Exactly. Be honest with me. How far into the hair metal did you get?
I liked that, a lot of the popular shit, you know.
Did
Poison
you?
Was okay. Cool. Motley Crue was really cool. I don't want to say that I got really into it, because I had a boss that was really, really into hair metal that just like blew my mind with the shit he knew. It was astounding. So I would say that I knew a lot. I knew like Bang Tango and Gorky Park and like kind of like some random bands, but like a little more obscure, but still a bit popular. But
sure, yeah.
But I wouldn't
Bang
say that
Tango.
I would. Yeah, Bang Tango. Like I wasn't a connoisseur.
Congratulations, you're definitely the first person to mention Bang Tango.
Really?
On the podcast.
All right, great.
Yeah, way to go. Okay, so I got it. I'm starting to see the formation of Agnostic Front, Waylon Jennings, The Cure, moving around a lot, constantly being exposed to skateboarders named Spike. Like I'm starting to see. I'm starting to see a little bit of it, but when
my dad was a biker, so there were all kinds of fucked up people all over the place.
Oh, okay, like, all right.
Like really shitty. Like we were white trash, you know. So it
like
was,
a biker, like live to ride to live leather vest guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right
yeah.
on. Okay,
like,
all right.
Fucked
yeah.
up, like crazy shit going on. Like, really fucked up stuff. I saw a lot of things that children should not see.
Gotcha. Okay.
As I grew up. So.
Wow. This is turning into a therapy session, man. You want to lay down on the couch? Is this cool? Or you...
I prefer to sit up.
Okay, good.
In case I upset myself and have to run immediately. Already be on my feet.
Okay. So when did you become the I'm going to grab a microphone and be a vocalist and a band guy. Because that vocalists, you guys, you songwriter vocalist guys, it's most of it is an outlet. So at some point you decided, okay, here's how I'm going to burp the pressure, right?
I don't know. I think, you know, a lot of people talk about that playing music is therapeutic, but I've never really felt that. I've never played and it felt better afterwards. I don't know if maybe okay. There's something wrong with me. Maybe I'm not doing it right.
Definitely. But, yeah, you're definitely have something wrong.
But when I was my mother tells me when I was a kid, I used to sing a lot. There was a tree in some yard that we had in some house we were living in. I would climb the tree and sing Billy Idol songs a lot.
Okay.
And so I was always kind of doing that. I always enjoyed singing to at some level.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, I guess I was like 15 when I started singing like in a band with some friends at a party.
Okay.
And we, there was
like cover songs.
Yeah. We were doing like Slayer and, Sepultura and like, Deicide's, like just like metal and death metal and like shit like that.
Okay.
So that is kind of where I cut my teeth, just in a garage, just right. Fucking around. I was, 15, just like drinking friends and just getting high and getting drunk and playing, just like doing covers, Biohazard songs and shit like that.
Biohazard, right. Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right.
Yeah. Well, we did a killer cover of Punishment. It was good.
I remember Punishment.
That record is still holds up, by the way. If you've
totally.
Not listened to Urban Discipline, it's a great, great, great
totally
album.
Holds up.
I love that record.
I like everything about Biohazard except the station identification in the beginning of every song. Like, I kind of feel like I know the name of your band, I know what town you're from, and I know what zip code you live in, and I know what year it is. You can bypass all that shit and just get to the
no,
point.
No, but that's part of their thing. It's like that.
That's a New York hardcore thing that I don't identify with because I grew up in farms in Pennsylvania.
Had that hip-hop vibe and shit.
Right.
Yeah.
I got it. I know. I just always felt like, yeah. Get to the point, you know? Yeah, I remember that. I saw Biohazard at CC's in Moosic, Pennsylvania a thousand years ago. And, yeah, Billy brought us up on stage to sing with him and everything, and it was like I got winded halfway through it. And like during the song, he was like, "It's not as fucking easy as it looks, is it?" And I'm like, "Ah, I'm on stage in front of people. Don't embarrass me." It was pretty funny. Yeah, Billy.
I was living with some folks in Massachusetts for a bit when I was in junior high, and one of the girls that lived there. She was friends with them, so she would see them whenever they were in Providence. She would come out, and she had like cool, like inside news and fucking stories about guys, and like Billy's number or something. And then she got like a Modaleo before that record came out. She had like a burn of it, or maybe she had like a cassette, like they had dubbed it for her, and I had the dub, and I thought I was like the fucking coolest kid because I had this like. Also, this is now, yeah, it's a new Biohazard. You guys haven't heard it. You probably want to check it out. It's pretty cool.
I'm in the club.
Yeah. I'm with my girl I live with. She's friends with Biohazard. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked Modaleo. I thought that was a good record.
Yeah. There's some good songs on there, I think. I haven't really revisited that record in a long time.
Me neither. But I remember liking it, and I remember it not being that popular and being like, this should be just as popular as the other stuff. But
closed. It can't be any worse than State of the World Address, which is the previous record. Which wasn't a bad record. It wasn't a great record. So, I don't remember it being any worse than that. So, But I don't have very good memory anymore. So.
I can't remember what tour I saw them on. I think I saw them with the dude. I saw them with the dude from Helmet. Rob, what's his name?
Oh, yeah. He replaced Bobby, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bobby left. Rob came out.
I think that was a Modaleo album. I think Bobby left. That record, right?
I think it might have been the Modaleo tour because I remember Evan and like making fun of Helmet on stage, and I remember being like, how the hell are you making fun of Helmet? They're better than you guys.
They're way better than
you know. Whatever. Okay, so drunk and high and in a garage and doing Slayer and Sepultura covers, and eventually somebody asked you to be a vocalist in their band, or you started a band or something.
I mean, that's what we were... These other... I always hung out with older kids.
Okay.
So these kids were a bit older than, a couple years older than me, and they already had a band. They had been in this band for a little bit, and the guy that sang was, his timing was really bad because we were teenagers. Like, no one knew that, really understood it. So, but I suppose I just had a better sense of it than he did. So one day, yeah, we were at a party and he wasn't around, or he went off to do whatever. And then I just sang, oh, we're going to do like Angel of Death or something. You should sing.
Sure.
So I just started singing, and I just did a bunch of songs with them, and they said like, oh man, you should have you sing instead of this kid Donnie was a kid singing, and so we started just kind of play. It was really sensitive, like they had to kick him out, but no one wanted to kick him out, and it was an awful experience to deal with that, because you know everybody was friends and you had to kick a guy out of a band.
Yeah, I remember those days. So
that's where I started. I started doing that, and then once I got rid of Donnie, I was in the band. We never played any shows. We were demoing stuff, and we tried to write songs, and you know, we did the best we could, but we weren't good.
Now at that point, were you like, yeah, this is just something that I do, but I need to focus on my grades and a life and a career, or were you like all in, like, oh my God, this is it. I need to be in a band. I'll be a rock star guy.
Even before I was doing that, I wanted to sing in a band. And,
okay.
Like I said, I was a kid, I was singing. And so I always wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. And school, you know, my grades and shit, that was never something I focused on. I did a lot of acid and got drunk and high a lot, so I didn't go to all of my classes, and eventually got kicked out. Or I had to go to summer school my freshman year of high school. I had to go to summer school.
Gross.
And I was skipping all of my summer school classes because I was just getting really fucked up. And one day I went to class, and the principal, he must have been the principal, he came in and he called me out, and you were only allowed to miss X amount of days, and I had far surpassed that. And the one day I ended up showing up, they said, yeah, you can't, you're all done here, so you gotta go. So that was the end of school for me. I never went back to school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I have an eighth grade education.
Hey man, that's all right.
But
dude, you didn't miss much.
No, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I missed a lot of bonding, like teenage bonding or something like that.
Well, that's sure, but you got bonding somewhere else. But as far as like book knowledge, you didn't miss much.
I wasn't doing very well. You know, I was never good. I wasn't a good student. I didn't pay attention. I had trouble focusing, and when I would talk to teachers and say, you know, I can't really, not really understanding this and that, they always would say, you just don't apply yourself. You know, this was
sure.
You know, this was 95 or 94 or whatever.
Okay.
You know, you're not trying hard enough, and you know, that was sort of, you know, the way it was. I was living with my father at the time. You know, when I went to junior high and high school. My mother had, I don't want to say it, I love my mother very much. She sort of just kind of ran out of, I don't want to say patience. She didn't really know what to do with me. I was getting in a lot of trouble. And so I went to live with my father, hoping that would, I would straighten out. All my friends were there. I had all my stoner friends and was playing music and stuff. So,
uh-huh.
So I went there, and that was just terrible. You know, my father had like, no idea how to raise a child. He was capable of creating children, but not nurturing them or teaching them anything.
Okay.
So I went there, and then he was in prison for a bit while I was up there. And
what did he go to jail for?
I would rather. I don't really want to talk about that type of stuff.
No problem.
But so it was just a bad environment, and I wasn't a good student. So it was out of school real quick, and I had to do something, and you know, my mother snatched me back up and said, you know, you're gonna have to go to work. And I started working this kitchen in a restaurant, and broke my arm after a couple months. I was getting drunk. I went to visit my friends, and I got drunk. At a playground, and I jumped off of a swing, like a big tire swing. We were all screwing around, and I dislocated my wrist pretty bad. So I couldn't work, so I lost my job, prep cooking and dishwashing and all that kind of bullshit, which I actually liked, but you know, I lost the job, and at that point I think everyone kind of threw their hands up, didn't know what to do with me, so I went back to my stoner friends and just started sleeping on couches, and I lived at a park. I spent all my time at this park, and ate when I could and slept where I could, and you know, did whatever I could do. So yeah, I just wanted to play music and sing in this metal band, and that you know,
the same band. Like, are you still affiliated with the Slayer cover guys?
Yeah, we were still playing. We were writing music and trying to do all that shit. And,
What was the name of that band?
We were called Misled for a while.
Okay.
And then I think we were trying to get that was sort of like the tentative name for a bit, and then it never stuck. We always wanted to change it and do something. We never got a new name. It was Misled.
Misled
was my first, not a real band, because we never really played any shows, but that was the first like band I was in.
Okay. All right.
That's sort of the summary of my life right there. So like,
right. Then, Misled.
Endless wrong turns and fuck ups, thinking I was doing what was best for me. What would I know? But well, eventually,
you wound up all right, man. Don't be so hard on yourself.
No, it's okay. I've embraced it at this point.
This is half of your life ago, so you obviously figured some shit out, right?
No, well, one would think, but you'll see. We've still got a bit more.
We got more. Right? Oh, okay, yeah. Part two, right?
But you know, I had met John and Daughters. We had met in high school.
This is the drummer, right?
Right. So John and I had met in high school, and he and I. He was playing in some band with a couple other guys I knew, and I kind of invited myself along to play with them, and they like had songs and like had their shit, and you know, I was the guys I knew, like everybody listened to metal, like everybody knew Slayer, of course, and like everybody listened to a lot of, you know, death metal and like Cannibal Corpse and all that kind of shit, so but I was meeting dudes like that new shit that I knew that like these other guys didn't know. Like they were into like 25 to Life and Dead Guy, and like, you know, they knew New York hardcore bands and all kinds of cool shit. So I had like, oh, these are people I can like talk to music about now. Finally,
I was not expecting to have such a New York hardcore centric conversation with you. This is interesting.
Well, I mean, Dead Guy and 25 to Life is more like Jersey, right? Isn't it?
I don't know where. I thought 25 was pretty much downtown New York.
But. No, you know what? I think Rick to Life was from Jersey. I'm pretty sure he was Jersey. He was like right over the bridge, and Dead Guy was from Jersey as well. I'm pretty sure.
Got it.
But you know, but everybody knew, you know, the shit I was listening to. Like I was bringing stuff to the guys all the time. Like I would stay up late and listen to a Nasty Habits radio show, which was like the Emerson College. You know, metal and hardcore and
yeah,
I would stay up late. Yeah, I would stay up late. Mark Thompson, who ran Hydrahead Records, who is a very good friend of mine. It was his show. Like he co-hosted that show, I listened to in junior high and high school. And so I grew up kind of listening to Mark, and he turned me on to a lot of stuff, and then eventually we became good friends when Daughters ended up on Hydra Head. So I was always bringing music to these metal dudes and these, like, my stoner friends, but, like, they didn't know. It was like they were playing music and they liked it. Everybody liked metal, but no one, like, really gave a shit enough to, like, kind of climb into the hole and then pull the dirt in, you know, and really just like let it overtake them. And so I was finally hanging out with guys that were into that same thing, that, like, mm-hmm. punk and hardcore and metal were sort of like everybody's life to an extent.
Right.
So, yeah, I started playing with John. And when I thought, oh, I could be in two bands, like, this, how hard can that be? Like, and those other guys got pissed, man. Like, these my stoner friends were pretty mad that I was in another band. I think they felt kind of slighted or angry or whatever their deal was. So they told me I had to pick one, and I was like, oh, these other guys aren't making me pick. They're being pretty cool about it. So fuck it. I'll just go play with them. So
mm-hmm.
that was John and I. That was our first band. We started and stayed with that band.
Man, you guys have been together a long time. Yeah, forgive my ignorance. John was in As the Sun Sets, right?
Yeah, John was in As the Sun Sets.
So this eventually turns to As the Sun Sets.
It right? becomes As the Sun Sets. It's myself and John is playing drums. This guy John that I oddly went to. He was in my junior high class, my 7th and 8th grade classes. Mm-hmm. Was singing, so we were doing two vocals. We had dual vocals, wow. So it was very, very mid 90s.
Dual vocals.
Yeah.
Which one of you was the rapper?
He was kind of doing the rap thing. He was really into VOD. He had this, like, delay pedal and shit, and he was,
dude,
like,
I loved VOD.
Right. They were like, this is like, what was that record?
The self-titled one or still the EP?
Self-titled. There. Who put it out? Did Rev put that out? That was Rev, right?
Rev, or was that? I think that I'm gonna go with Roadrunner.
Maybe it was Roadrunner. Yeah.
Yeah. The green
on the cover thing. Yeah, a little splash.
I'm pretty sure that was Roadrunner, and I think for a while they held the debut record for Roadrunner for sales, because that record was bomb ass. It was so good.
That record was really good when it came out.
Really good.
Yeah. So he was really into it. He was doing that type of thing, and I had more of like a heavy Hatebreed vocal thing going.
Gotcha.
So we had two of those, and then this guy Mike was playing bass, and this kid Justin was playing guitar. He didn't stick around very long. We ended up with this guy Chris, who was just a mess of a person. He's just, like, fucking clueless townie. I have no, like, I don't know what happened to him or where he went. He was just this weird, weird guy, and he was playing music with us, and then he was just gone. We stopped playing, and he was vanished. No one knew. Never seen him.
We all have one of those in our past.
Yeah. So.
I know a guy who's, I still to this day don't know his real name. I wouldn't know him. I might know the guy in real life, and I don't know. Right. I wouldn't know him. His name was Shifty.
Wow.
Yeah. He didn't own a phone. So we would have to go knock on his apartment door to let him know when practice was going to be. And he showed up in coveralls with no shirt and no shoes.
That's kind of awesome.
Played guitar like a bat out of hell.
Yeah, this guy sounds great.
And then was just like, sorry, like, we're trying to be a little bit more organized than never knowing where anyone is. And, and he's just like, that's not what I do, man.
there was a Mark Thompson had some weird stories about that guy, Scott from Zaster, who apparently was, like, only communicating via fax for a while. Like, wouldn't
fax.
Wow. Yeah, like, he would only use a fax machine to communicate or something like that. Like, he got rid of his cell phone, and he was constantly, like, And then, like, he got rid of cell phone. He was only communicating through email, and then he stopped communicating through email, and he was only faxing information. It was some weird shit. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's like admirable, and it's
like sounds fun. It sounds admirable, but at the same time, being in a band with somebody like that, oh my god, dude, I'd throttle the dude after the third fax didn't go through. I'd kick his door in and be like, "What the hell is wrong?
Who has a fucking fax machine? Like, how is that at all practical?"
Right.
But
like,
I do,
like
but
what again, you're saving, what you're saving by not having a cell phone, you're buying in reams of paper. You know what I mean? Like what makes?
But I don't even think it's that. I think it's sort of like an anti. It's very much against this concept that everyone is like right there when you need them immediately.
Right.
You know, I sort of I do miss. A part of me misses the days of like coming home and having messages on an answering machine and
yeah,
and you know, trying to catch somebody at home and like remembering people's phone numbers and shit like that, you know.
Yep.
I miss that to an extent, but again, I do like that if like I need to know something, like I gotta fucking know this right now. Like
I remember those days of getting like band information on a sticky note written from my mom because I missed the call and she answered the phone and somebody called the landline and I was out or something.
Or on a date. And, but it's like, it's Thursday. You've got to be at this place at 8 o'clock. It's like, you got to fucking be there, man. You know?
And
you just made sure that you were there at 8 o'clock. Like that was it, you know? And that's sort of lost on people now. That's sort of like,
definitely.
All right, so I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to do it. But now everyone's got all this leeway. They're like, oh, well, fuck, I'm watching Netflix or doing this fucking thing. Like, you know, they don't, nobody shows up for what they say they're in a,
we have so many other things to do now. We have so many distractions.
Yeah, shit's just easy. Like, it's just easy to get lost and I fucking do it. I'm not like
Me too. I mean, you're in Cheltenham. You're not even 90 minutes away from me, and we're dicking around trying to figure out how to record each other. We should have just met at a coffee house somewhere and just talked.
Yeah, really.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well,
here we are.
Hindsight and all that stuff.
Yeah, you know, now you're moving, so we blew that, but whatever.
Now what are you doing?
All right, so let's fast forward this to As the Sun Sets.
Okay.
What happened? How did that come to fruition?
You know, I don't remember how. I think that the band that we were doing with the two singers, I think that it had just kind of run its course. We weren't very good. And we knew that we wanted to play just more like hardcore, just like play hardcore music instead of this like weird, like fusion of like hardcore and like whatever the fuck else was a mix of like bullshit that we were doing in that other band. So John and I, I was living in John's basement, I think at this point.
Okay.
He was still in high school. I had dropped out. And I was sort of, I was just sleeping on the couch in his basement, which I did for years. And
years.
Oh yeah, years.
His parents were down.
His parents didn't give a shit.
Oh okay.
His dad's a crazy guy. He's a character.
Okay.
And his mom's just a sweet lady. So they had a downstairs room. They didn't do anything with it. So
you became the brother.
John's they had brother a finished kinda. Basement, and there was a couch. And cable, so I just lived down there with
good enough
a bag of maybe two shirts in it or something, I don't know. But so John and I were kind of became inseparable. We wanted to be in like a real hardcore band, play like real hardcore music, and play like real hardcore shows, and not be kind of embarrassed by this like rap core type of thing we were doing. So we started playing with a couple guys that we knew. We knew this one guy, Joe, who started playing bass in As the Sun Sets. He like knew knew guys, and he was going to Boston for shows. He like knew guys in Boston, and he was like friends with this band and this and that. And so Joe seemed pretty fucking cool because we didn't know anyone. John and I were just like fucking squares, you know. We were losers. We weren't cool, and when we went to shows, nobody talked to us. But you went to a show with Joe, and like Joe knew people.
Gotcha. He was
moshed hard, you know. He did spin kicks and fucking stuff like that. Right. So
tastemaker,
right? So you know, we got Joe in there, and then a couple other friends of mine, and just started playing, like, started trying to be like a real hardcore man, started writing that shit, and over time that came, that turned into As the Sun Sets, just over maybe a year or two, it just developed into that. And a guy was playing guitar, he left the band, and this guy Mike, who was in a local band in Providence, started playing, he ended up joining As the Sun Sets. And after we had, like, cycled through multiple people, we had so many people playing guitar in As the Sun Sets, like this guy Andrew, who was in Piecemeal, who was a band from New Hampshire. They ended up, like, guys from that band, like Kevin Baker from Hope Conspiracy and All Pigs Must Die was in Piecemeal. Mark Castillo was the drummer for Piecemeal. He ended up in Bury Your Dead. So there were those guys kind of splintered and went into a bunch of different directions. But so this guy Andrew was in the band. This guy Davey played with us for a bit. This guy Brian played with us. They had both been in a band from the suburbs of way out of way from Boston. They weren't not suburbs of Boston. Called Fall from Grace, that were sort of a melodic hardcore band.
Never heard of that.
They did like one split with this band called Polyglot. That was pretty cool. But so we just had so many people cycling through, and when we started spending a lot of time in Providence and playing Providence shows and booking a lot of shows there, and this guy Mike, his band broke up. This band called Pitchfork Seven, that were just a local whatever the hell they were, band metal core, metal hardcore, whatever. Mike joins As the Sun Sets, and then that was sort of, that was the core of the group for a while, for a couple years. Five of us.
As the Sun Sets.
As the Sun Sets. And then eventually Joe left, right? Joe leaves, he joins Blood Has Been Shed. And then my friend from grade school lived on the Cape, my friend Jeremy. He went to RISD. He was going to RISD, and we sort of met up. He started playing bass. Actually, he was doing noise originally. He was just going to do a noise. We were, like, fucking around with noise a lot. John got a Dr. Sample and was, you know, screwing around with that. And Jeremy, like, knew how to use that shit and was, like, listening to, like, Newthrush and fucking crazy stuff. He had like a Merzbow shirt, you know, the rest was like, I had no fucking idea what was going on. So he was just going to do noise, and that was going to be his thing, because he didn't really know how to play bass very well. And so we were doing two guitars, vocals and drums and noise. We played this Cryptopsy show at the Palladium in Worcester. It's a huge show. It's a huge death metal show. As right, since that's really had no business being there. And it was the first show with Jeremy, and he was supposed to do noise. He had a mic stand. He was just going to use it a couple times, and he just like fucking lost his mind and just started singing, like screaming into the microphone the whole thing. It looked like we had two singers. He forgot to kind of do noise the whole time, and these death metal guys hated us, man. Everybody hated us. We had fun, but people just were not very happy about it.
Right.
So we realized that Jeremy should probably have an instrument in his hand, because we got to keep him busy. Otherwise he's gonna fucking
turn into
the singer.
That was a surprise on stage for all of you. You were kind of you kept turning around like, dude, why are you singing right now? Or
I don't think I had noticed. I was told, like, I caught a couple times that he was just like holding the mic stand and like screaming into the mic stand, and but I didn't think he was doing it the whole time. And then I was told that he just was like full on doing that the entire set. So, he needed idle hands, one of the devil's playthings, as they say, right? So we had to hand him a bass and, you know, keep him busy.
That was that?
Yeah, okay. So then that was As the Sun Sets up until the end, where we finally stopped.
I want to talk about the end of As the Sun Sets, because there's, I feel like people that are in the know talk about As the Sun Sets, calling it a day. But then there's other people that like said that in your last release, I can't remember the name of your release. It was 8949 or something.
8949, yeah.
Yeah. In 8949, you basically said, the sun set for the last time. We're done. We're daughters from now on.
Yeah, that was a...
What the hell? Like, so daughters is a continuation of As the Sun Sets, or was that just like...
That wasn't supposed to be there. That was,
Well, you put it in there.
I know, it wasn't supposed to. We were looking at the layout for that record, because we had broken up when Jeremy was working on the layout for that. And, you know, Jeremy went to RISD, so he did all of our visual stuff.
Okay.
So we were looking at the layout. I said, hey, man, you can't put that in there. That's not true. You know, we were starting a new band. Or something along those lines. You know, that was the gist of it. That's got to go.
Okay.
And I it just got fucked up. Like, somebody took it out or didn't take it out, or maybe, like, the wrong...
Well, who wrote it in the first place?
I think Jeremy had written... Either Jeremy or the guy... this guy Mitch, who had put the had worked at who did Trash Art, who put out that last EP.
Okay.
Somebody wrote it, and I said that you can't put that. That's not right. That's not because it wasn't even true. We weren't even like restarting as a new, like, we were just starting a new band. We'd broken up. We were a new band. And it just didn't get taken out. I guess somebody just forgot, which was sort of like, that was like our MO to like totally have things completely fucked up every time we did something as Addison Sets, because that 7744, the layout for that record was completely different. Those live pictures were supposed to be different photographs, and the live photos were placeholders, as was the four number series. 7744 wasn't actually gonna be the name of the record. It was just supposed to be a placeholder.
What's with the numbers and the titles?
We were gonna use the longitude and latitude of Providence, Rhode Island.
Oh, cool.
For the name of the record, and then we never got around to it, and we just were like, 7744 is fine, and 8949 was the phone number in my old apartment. So
no kidding.
Yeah,
and 7744 was just like
7744 was just four numbers, and then we were doing that second EP, and Jeremy said, "Oh, we should do numbers again. What would be the numbers?" And I 8949 is fine. We don't need to think about it too much.
So what are the craziest, like, you obviously had some fans because you guys had some notoriety. What are the craziest, like, versions of people's ideas of what the numbers stood for?
I didn't hear too much. We had one friend of ours said, had said that he had, like, added the numbers into each other and divided numbers, and we're trying to find a pattern in the number sequence, and they're just like, didn't mean anything.
It's my phone number, dude. Settle down.
Yeah, no one really said anything to us like more than that. Like, there was one friend.
What's the deal with the Lord? You got another drink? I didn't even see you do that. When did you do that?
I did it when the phone was going all crazy, I guess.
Man, you're like a drink ninja.
Yeah, well, I gotta get good at something. I'm just fucking sober stay-at-home dad. I'm gonna figure some shit out.
You wanna talk about that? Why there's non-alcoholic beer in your drink? All right, you're sober now, you said.
Yeah, I'm a shitty alcoholic, you know?
Uh-huh.
So
is that like a professional diagnosis, or did you just decide, I gotta stop?
No. I was pretty fucked up and you know, bad. I wasn't a good person. I still struggle with being a good person. So yeah, I'm getting sober. I thought getting sober would be a cure to a lot of my ailments, but
okay.
I suppose it was just one thing I had to deal with. So
how long have you been sober?
8 years. Eight and a half years now.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And that was a part, you know, when daughters sort of broke up there for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got sober and I was, it just didn't seem like doing daughters didn't seem like something that was good for me anymore.
Okay.
You know, I got home from a tour and I was sitting on my bedroom floor, and I was dating this girl. She had just like thrown all my stuff out of her house that I had there, and I kind of came home to this like pile of shit in my house, and because she found I was like on tour, I was screwing around doing whatever I wanted.
Okay.
And you know, she got wind of it and was justifiably angry at me.
Sure.
And I was sitting on my bedroom floor, like, it was noon, a little after 12 maybe, and then I was drinking, and I was like, I finished a bottle of whiskey, and I was like on another bottle, and my roommate came home, and he saw me sitting nude on the floor drinking at noon. He said, "Hey, are you all right?" I said, "I don't think so." And he said, "All right, well, I'll be upstairs if you need anything." I said, "Okay." And then, you know, it was very clear that I had a problem, and that you know, I wasn't taking very good care of myself or being good to anybody else. And you know, and so, I mean, that was sort of like my moment of clarity, as alcoholics have. Yeah, they have that moment of clarity. That was it. Yeah.
Jesus moment, as they say.
Yeah. But before that, you know, it was like, I had, you know, people would tell me, "Oh, man, you're drunk last night, and they did this thing, and it was so funny." And every once in a while, I think, like, this is my fucking life. Like, this is, like, it's a joke. Like, what I do is a punchline. Like, the way I act, the way I behave.
Okay.
That's funny to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, you know, so that bothered me, but.
Did that bother you before? I mean, you said you were with a girlfriend at the time, so you're not with your wife, which means you didn't have your kid yet. So this was like a, you figure this out on your own moment. This wasn't like a, I met my wife and it's time to clean up, or I'm having a baby, it's time to clean up.
That right. kind of thing. No, that it was a, yeah, like I said, I was sat on the floor and thought, like, this is no way for a human being to live. So this is, I got to stop doing this.
Good.
So that's what I did.
Good for you, man. That's like legit. That's real. That's a non-conditional, you know what I mean? Like I'm doing this on my own. I have to figure this out, rather than, oh, I better do this or I will lose her or I will lose my kid, or, you know what I mean? That's I'm not saying that's any less pure or anything, but I mean, I like the story of, like, dude, I got to get my ducks in a row on my own, you know?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, you know, I got a lot of shit wrong with me, and I really thought that drinking was the problem, and that everything would even out if I got sober. But, and it seemed like that for a bit, but, mm-hmm. you know, as it turns out, that my problems are deeper than that, but,
yeah.
you know. You get to
yeah, but you don't have to throw whiskey on top of them, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, there's that at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. As I'm sitting here drinking, I'm proud of that. That's pretty cool, actually. I like that part of the story, because if you're on a bad road with it, it's I'm glad you figured out how to get off that path. You know.
Yeah.
We'll see anybody get hurt, man. And shit's bad for some people, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's my father's a career alcoholic, you know? He's
career, made a job out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's all he's done is since he got home from Vietnam. That's like all, and then probably while he was in Vietnam, he was doing that shit. So all he's done his whole life is a drug addict and alcoholic and just fucked up guy. And, you know, he gave that to me, so...
Mm-hmm.
But I had to, you know, he passed some other fucked up shit to me too. So you just gotta deal with it one thing at a time, I guess. So I got the alcohol and drugs. I'm done with that. So I've got to figure out how to be done with the rest. But
8.5 years sober, alcohol and drugs. Like, you stopped it all right then?
Yeah, I wasn't big into drugs. I never liked speed. It made me really antsy and uncomfortable, and it made my body just feel really weird, for lack of a better term, weird. Mm-hmm. My body felt weird. But I fucking drank all the time. That's all I did. I constantly drank. Like, yeah, I loved it.
Gotcha.
It was great. It was a really great time.
Right.
But it was terrible.
How's dad now? Is that something you want to talk about?
He's dying. He's got cancer in the stomach. It's in his kidneys. It's in his fucking everywhere. It's in a few places inside. They keep saying he'll be dead by this time, and then, you know, I feel like doctors do that. They tell you, like, oh, we've got 8 months or 6 months or whatever, and then you clear that hurdle, and they go, well, you'll be dead, you got 6 more months, or maybe it's a year, they don't know. So he gets chemo, he's off the chemo, he goes back on it, you know.
I do remember. I just passed my 10-year anniversary of losing my dad, and it started as lung, and it started off as like, ooh, this doesn't look good. I kind of don't know how long it's going to be. Let's do some more testing. And then it was like, you know, more testing, more chemo. We're going to start. I never really remember hearing times. I just felt like they didn't want to commit the times until it was like, yeah, he doesn't have very much longer. And it was kind of like the weatherman's looking out the window going, yeah, it's raining. It's kind of like, well, I got it now. You know what I mean? Like, but I also get like, from a liability standpoint, they can't be like, you know, if they would have told me from diagnosis to burying the guy, it was 7 months, would have been kind of impressive that they could have figured that out, you know?
Right.
But, you know, you gotta ride that out, and that's that. So,
it's like a due date, right? When they gave when we were having the boy, you know, we had the due date.
Right.
And then if he's not born by here, we'll just go in there. We'll take him out, you know?
Yeah.
So they could just shoot my dad. Well, if you're not dead by this day, we'll go take him in the backyard in the woods. And we have a nice farm for old men that they go to.
Nice farm. He'll be able to graze out there with
He'll
the
play
other
with all the other old bikers.
Yeah, man. My heart goes out to you, man. I know what you're going through. It sucks.
It's all right. I mean, I don't want to say it's all right. I have a complicated relationship with my father, so.
I understand. Yeah.
So don't worry. I'll be okay.
Okay. All right. Well, still, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. So back to, we keep getting sidetracked, but we want to talk about when daughters got started. This is like that's like a thing now. As the Sun Sets was a,
it wasn't anything, you know, it really wasn't anything until it was over. Then everyone wanted to talk about, you know, the year when we broke up.
That's a good point. You guys, I think As the Sun Sets got more popular after you guys were done.
Yeah,
when we broke up,
we read that we broke up the same year that Botch broke up, and there was something on, like, I don't know if Lamgo was a thing, but there was some sort of online chat blog website,
HXC.com or something,
whatever it was. But there was an article saying that the most disappointing, I think it might have been Lamgo or whatever the hell it was. That the biggest breakups or the most disappointing breakups of the year was like Botch, As the Sun Sets, and like two other bands. And I just thought, nobody gives a shit about us. Why, like, now that we're not like we toured, we went on tours, we played shows, and no one fucking cared. Like, you know, we did the East Coast a couple times, and we went towards the West, you know, we got as far as like Detroit and Chicago areas, you know, and nobody fucking cared. You know, we played basement shows to 10 people.
Yeah.
No, it was, you know, which was fine. We didn't know it could be more, that we were just happy to be out there. You'd eat a can of tuna fish and that was like it for the day. And then
you were on Hydra.
That was normal.
You were on Hydra Head though, right?
As the Sun Sets?
Yeah.
No. Moment of Clarity put out the first record, which I think they only did the one record. That was Rich and Howard from Blood Has Been Shed. That was their label that they were starting up.
Okay.
And I think they just did our record, and that was the end of it. And then we ended up on Undecided Records, which is a Florida-based label. And that was like really the end, you know. That we went down there for those shows, and we were coming back, we had the last show. We met with the label, and the layout was wrong. Like I told you, they had messed up the layout for 7744, and I said, you know, this layout, these are the wrong pictures. Like, everything's wrong. And you know, the guy running the label said, well, you know, so-and-so worked really hard on it, and, you know, blah, 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 you should be happy. It's like, you should be happy? It's fucking, you've made a mistake. Like, you made a mistake, man. This isn't what we're supposed to be. And he told me, he said, you know, you should think about turning around and facing the crowd when you're playing. You know, people don't want to look at your back. And we got in, and we had a guitar player that was, like, skipping practices to go hang out with his girlfriend, you know, myself and Jeremy and John were we were writing the music, we were writing all the songs, and we thought, all right, well, what the fuck are we doing here? And the clearly we're, the three of us are the core of this group. Let's just get out of it. Get away from this label that clearly doesn't give a shit about us. We'll get away from these two guys that aren't very dedicated to what we're doing, and we'll just start a new band. And that was when the three of us started Daughters.
I started Daughters. Here we go. Here's the whole reason we're talking. You're currently in a band that people are like into, and I want to know where we're at.
I do too. I mean, I'd like to know where we're at. It's kind of a weird group of people.
Why? What makes it weird?
I've been playing with John now for almost 20 years.
Yeah. Phenomenal drummer, by the way.
He's great. Yeah, he's a great drummer. Nick has his eccentricities and things, and definitely. Sam is like this, like he comes from like his family is like happy and still together, and Sam's responsible. He's like a real person. And the rest of us are really fucked up. So
you're a real person, dude.
Like, I mean, I exist, but I mean, I'm not like.
Well, wait a minute. You said you're an at-home dad, right?
Right.
Okay. So how many women? How many posts have you seen on Facebook where women are like, "I'm an at-home mom. This is a full-time job. I exist. I'm important. I'm the most blah 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 blah." Like, why wouldn't that qualify for you? You're raising a kid.
I don't have Facebook. I guess.
No, okay. All right. I just use that.
Should I get a Facebook ad?
No, don't get a Facebook ad. I hate that I'm on there. I feel filthy. But it's just enough. For the stupid
I have that
podcast.
Instagram though, so that's kind of
that's just as gross. They're owned by Facebook, so it's the same thing. You're in the machine. But yeah, no. My point is like you're sober for 8.5 years, and you're at home raising a kid. What I mean, give yourself a fucking break, Lex. Like, dude, you're doing something important.
No, I won't be able to. Will I become complacent then if I start patting myself on the back for assimilating with people, society and I don't know.
Nah, I don't know about that.
Normal
folks. I don't know. You know, I don't know about
people that like mow their lawns and shit like that. And
yeah, I mow my lawn.
Wave to the neighbors.
My lawn and I wave to my neighbors and I have my iPod on and I'm listening to Daughters while I'm doing it. So, I mean, like, it's a thing. These people exist. We're out there, you know?
Yeah. All right, fair enough.
I have three kids and they all listen to horrible, shitty pop music. And I'm trying to get them to listen to Botch and Daughters and The Clash and stuff that I grew up on. I'm trying. I'm raging against that machine. Right. You gotta fight the good fight, sir.
Yeah, you do your best.
How old's your kid?
You can't do any more than that. He's gonna be 3 in May.
Oh my God, what a beautiful age. I'll give you some fatherly advice as a guy who's been there. Terrible twos, yeah, they last till they're 14, so.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a feeling. That
you might want to start drinking again. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Don't do that.
Thanks. All right, so where are we? Daughters?
Daughters, yeah. Back to Daughters. For crying out loud, for some reason, the universe is not letting us talk about your freaking band. So let's do this. You almost look like you were on the regular band release album cycle sort of thing for a while.
I don't know if we ever were. We got that 7-inch out real quick. And once we ended up on Robotic Empire, we got a record out in it. Sensible amount of time, or the first CD anyway, or LP, whatever the hell it was.
Let's talk about that real quick. How did you hook up with Robotic Empire? They're a phenomenal label.
Yeah, they're a great label, and Andy Lowe was just this great human being. He was just like so pleasant and friendly and kind, and he's just a really sincere person. He was just doing a lot of great shit, and he was putting out great records. He worked with so many good bands, and the bands that we really liked, and he put out, you know, Hassani Saba and Page 99, and so much good stuff.
Okay.
So it was really cool to kind of become a part of that. Not to kind of become, we became a part of that label.
Right.
And he just has this, like, he has this great way of communicating, this great way of speaking that's just so endearing and pleasant. You know, talking to Andy Lowe is like being wrapped in like your favorite blanket. It's just so fucking okay. Great.
Okay.
He's this great guy. It's great slang and great lingo, and he's just he's just fucking wonderful. Sorry, as I just like love him so much.
No, that was cute. You're gushing about him.
I know what I just because I'm sitting here and I thought like, I haven't talked to him in a bit, and I should say hello to him. You know, I'll text him tomorrow. But I don't really remember. I think that we were playing a lot of shows, and we were just kind of, we were touring on the 7-inch. We did a tour, sort of not a full U.S. tour, like a half U.S. tour.
Okay.
We got out to Texas and then sort of went straight up to like Sioux Falls, and then headed back towards home.
Okay.
We didn't get out west. And
sorry, West Coast, you're too far away.
Yeah. I guess we just didn't have the time. You know, we had on that tour, we had actually spent like 10 days or something. We had played like 8 shows in Florida. And it was...
Florida takes... You can tour Florida. It takes a while to get through it, man. That's a long-ass state.
You could like live in Florida and go on tour for a week and stay in Florida.
Uh-huh.
And just go back to Miami or Orlando or wherever you're from.
There's a beach town every 20 minutes, man. I mean, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were there for a really long time, and it was pretty awful.
Awful?
It was just too long. It was just too long to be in one place, I felt like.
Okay, all right.
You know, so.
Now, I would think, hold on. Now, for bands that have lived in vans and driven 18 hours between shows, you would think that being in Florida with nice weather and beaches and not having to drive that far from show to show, you would think that would be enjoyable. You're saying it was awful.
Well, first off, I hate the beach. But.
How do you hate the beach, man?
I hate the beach, man. The sand and the sun and people are around, and it's just terrible.
Okay.
You try to eat and get sand on your food, and
I don't think you're doing it right.
Are you laying down
while you're trying to eat? You have to stand up when you're going to eat, man.
Oh, is that what you stand up?
Yeah, don't lay in the sand while you're eating. You're going to get shit in your hot dog. All
right.
Yeah. We'll go to the beach.
I'll fix this, man. Great. So it was just like too long, man. It really like. Threw off because you're on tour, you're expected, you're somewhere, and then you move to the next place and you kind of move on. And then we were just in Florida for so long that it seemed like we weren't going to leave. And that
got it.
Was not that I hate Florida or just like going to Florida. It was our first real, like, it was a real tour. Like, we were on tour, we were out for like over a month, and it was like right in the middle. We hit Florida, and it was just such a long time to be in Florida that it just melted my brain.
I feel like that. I get that feeling when I drive through Ohio.
Yeah,
I feel like driving through Ohio takes 11 days.
There are a lot. There are many parts of this country that feel that way.
Trying to get from
Texas to like Arizona, I can feel like that. We're just
I've never done that before, so I'll take your word for it. But
it's rough.
I'm an East Coast guy that I kind of did the whole, like, I got out as far as the mid. I've never done anything musically past the Midwest, you know.
Right.
But I felt like that trek, the whole, like, Ohio through Michigan thing, I was like, we've been in the car for, like, a month, right? And it just felt like Ohio just lasted forever, man. I don't know.
Yeah,
well,
what are you
going to
do?
Yeah, what are you going
to do? You got to fucking do it if you want to go on tour and you want to drive around.
Yeah, get in the van. Get in the van, shut up, right?
Yeah. But you know, Andy must have seen us. Obviously, he saw us or on that tour or somewhere. But there, you know, there was a show we played in Pennsylvania somewhere, maybe in Philly or something. And we, had heard that like a rep from Relapse was there. Like somebody said, like, oh, the so and so from Relapse is going to be at the show.
Sounds like
coming out
probably Philly.
Us.
Yeah.
Right. And we thought, oh, shit. This is going to be cool.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, on the tour, I was getting naked like every night.
Huh.
Playing like the show, I was playing the shows, a lot of the shows naked. It was summer and it was hot, and we were just trying to upset people, I suppose. So we played naked a lot, and supposedly the rep was not impressed.
Yeah,
and left, and that, and we thought like, whoa, we really screwed that up. But then Andy Lowe came along, and we all met at a Chili's or something like that, and had dinner. And so, yeah, I guess. I mean, that's how we met with Andy, and he was just really interested in working with us, and really sincere, and was interested in who we were as people, and not just the band. We made a friend. He became our friend, and that was great.
Aww.
It was just like, hey, I'll put out your, cause especially the experience we had just had with John and I had, and Jeremy had just had with Undecided Records, where the guy was, you know, hey, you gotta make sure you're facing the crowd, and hey, your record doesn't look the way it's supposed to, but tough shit, you know, and to have Andy just like care about us, and
mm-hmm.
you know, hey, where'd you grow up, and blah blah blah, and how'd you get into punk, and it was just like, it was cool, man, it was cool.
Maybe I should talk to him.
Shit, he's fucking great. I think everybody should talk to Andy.
He'd be a killer guest, it sounds like.
He would be a great guest. Andy Lowe would be the best guest you've ever had.
I'm writing it down.
He's Andy fucking Lowe. Great. He's a great, great guy.
Andy Lowe, best guest ever.
Yeah. He lives in New Zealand now.
Oh, for crying out loud.
He moved to New Zealand. He put out that Floor discography LP thing, limited edition.
Yes, he did.
And then sold it and went to New Zealand, brought his family there, and has like five kids or something.
Does he really?
Oh, yeah. At least three. I think he's at four now. Up to four now.
Wow.
Every time I talk to him, I think his wife's pregnant. I swear.
Just be in the water. Wow. New Zealand. Speaking of Robotic Empire, you guys were involved in a lot of the Nirvana covers and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Andy worked with a lot of, I think he got a lot of bands that he had worked with over the years, and friends.
Right.
Projects that everybody on there was sort of, it's kind of an incestuous release.
Well, yeah.
All of them, you know, like.
It's very label release, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, everyone's people that have done something with a label before
mm-hmm.
were involved in a project that had been on the label somewhere down the line, so.
Right on.
So, yeah, that was really cool. You know, that was, I'm a little disappointed that the first, where we did Radio Friendly Unit Shifter and mm-hmm. You know, we had kind of been broken up, or we weren't speaking, and we had recorded everything but the vocals, and we had it done for years.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Andy was finally trying to get that record out, and he had worked on it. It was like a labor of love for him, that he was really, he spent a lot of time on it. And they asked, "Hey, you know, can you put those vocals on the song?" And I said, "Hey, oh my God, I'll get to it eventually." And I wasn't really interested in doing it. I think somebody said, Andy, or maybe John contacted me and said, "Hey, we're gonna have Steve Brooks from Torch sing on, and if you're not gonna do it," and I said, "Well, fuck you, I'll do that song right now." And I like did it that week, and I really mailed it in. And when I hear the recording, it's you know, it's disappointing. That I did it kind of out of spite, just to say like, well, fuck you, like, you're not doing something without me. Like I sing in this band, that's Steve.
Right.
So.
Right.
So I wish I put a little more of myself into it, but.
Did they go after Steve because you were taking so long, or was that just because you guys were having an overall falling out?
I think it's because I was taking a really long time. And
okay.
I think maybe Andy suggested it or something. And,
okay.
Because you know, it really did. If it was up to me, we wouldn't even have done it. I would have just, and not because we didn't want to be involved. I was just so unhappy, and I just wanted to stay away from daughters and the people involved in it. And
can we talk about that?
Yeah, talk about that.
What happened?
well, you know, I got sober and I was, you know, we have really volatile relationships in that band, and I don't think it, Nick and I have, we're kind of a yin and yang. We're very opposite. But
Nick recommended that I talk to you. He says his life is kind of in flux right now, and he's very crazy. And he said, "I think you'd have a more interesting conversation with Lex anyway." And I was like, "Okay, sure, I guess." So
I mean, he might have said that, but also he's such a ball of nerves at times. I mean, he's probably a little freaked out to have to talk
to
somebody about something. Yeah, you know, Nick and I are kind of always on the precipice of oblivion when we're together.
Why?
No, I don't know. I don't really know what it is. And it's not because we dislike each other. You know, I like Nick, and Nick, I know, likes me. But there's just something with the two of us that is, I can't explain it. I wish I could. I mean, perhaps, and if I could explain it, maybe it would all go away, and we never would have started playing again. Together, so you know, I'm glad we're playing together, and I want to continue to do so. And but when, you know, I had gotten sober, and I was, you know, training a lot, I was doing a lot of kickboxing and jiu-jitsu, and it was really important to me. And the idea of going on tour with everybody and taking time out of my nights to go and rehearse, and you know, I had stepped away from rehearsals kind of during Hell Songs. I hated going to rehearsal and hear guys like, "Can we play the fucking songs and not hear you do the same Snapcase cover like over and over again?" And you're like, I know it's very funny, but can we move on and like focus a little bit? So I would just get really frustrated being there.
Okay.
So I sort of removed myself from the group in that sense. So I'm pretty much a fault for a chunk of that.
Okay.
And you know, what are you going to do? Like, in hindsight, I could see that I alienated myself from everybody, but I think that it really became necessary for me to kind of get my shit together as far as like the drinking and the drugs to a lesser extent. So
were you the drinker and drug user, and no, you had, or was like everybody doing it, and you just decided?
Everybody was doing it, but I think that I took it, you know, I took it home with me.
Okay,
it became just what I did every single day. You know, when I got up, and then I did it till I went to sleep, and then again the next day.
Got it.
So, yeah, I definitely had a problem, but I don't. And, you know, I remember getting in arguments and getting too drunk to function and too drunk to play and starting arguments. And yeah, because I was just a drunk fucking piece of shit. Right. So, but we were all sort of willing to deal with each other's like bullshit just to play. So I think that I probably could have kept doing that for a little while longer, for much longer, for who knows,
right?
Because we were all just kind of willing to accept it so that we could just play. And it got to a point where I wasn't willing to sort of accept giving up my time, because I was training with guys and they were getting ready for fights, and I didn't want to give up time away from my team to play music with guys that I just wasn't getting along with, and that I wasn't getting anything out of it.
Okay.
On an emotional level or anything anymore.
You were having the same sort of relationship issues with John too, the guy that you've been with since great, like middle school.
You know, I don't think so. Not the way I have them with Nick. I think John and I have like a brotherly relationship where,
okay,
you know, we're so close that, you know, we can tell each other that the other is full of shit, or and just kind of like, yeah, fucking John fucking said this, like,
yeah,
you know,
gotcha.
And
then,
you know, and so on and so forth, you know, back and forth. Mm-hmm. So, but not in a, you know, malicious way. I think that if I heard John said I was being an asshole, I wouldn't be like, well, fuck John then. I would be like, oh,
Sean thinks I'm being an asshole, but if somebody said, you know, I was talking to Nick, and Nick said you were kind of being an asshole, I go, well, fuck Nick then, man. Fuck Nick. So, you know,
a little bit more, a little bit more caustic. Right.
Yeah, it's a different kind of, a different kind of relationship that, and
that tension seems to add to the crock pot of how Daughters comes out, though.
Right? I think it does, and without it, things would be a lot different, I assume, because I don't know, and I can't tell you because I've never, you really only get to do this type of thing once. If you spend over a decade in a band,
sure,
15 years or however long you've been doing it, what year is it right now? So 15 years or something, a little more.
Yeah, you guys. Yeah, the
2002, I think, right?
I can look it up. You guys,
yeah, can you look up when I started my band, please?
Yeah, sure, no problem. formation and early releases, 2002.
Yeah, so yeah, 15 years.
Mm-hmm. This is the 15-year anniversary of Daughters.
Oh, all right. That's. Is that like paper mache? Is that like the benchmark now?
buy each other like silverware or something. I don't know.
Here, I made you a paper mache mask of my own face. I did it with newspaper.
1949. This is As the Sun Sets, final recording, March 21st, 2002. The Sun Set for the Last Time, March 22nd, 2002. We Begin Anew as Daughters. And on March 25th, 2002, only 3 days after the band officially formed, Daughters released their first debut EP. And we're talking on March 31st. Man, dude, we're within a week of your 15-year anniversary of you guys hitting the pavement.
Huh.
This just became an anniversary episode. This is like a thing now.
How about that?
Go put a party hat on. We'll get like those little confetti poppers.
That sounds like the lamest fucking party.
It's terrible.
Like aging punks just like... Right. Skyping and like praising ourselves and wearing stupid hats and shit, throwing confetti. So sad.
Let's sit around and talk about how awesome we are. Ugh.
Yeah. You know, and I hope so. I really do hope that that's not coming out as a way that Nick and I hate each other. I just think that there's a sort of a healthy, combative attitude that we have that.
I think, yeah. I don't know, man. I have friends like that. I have friends that if somebody says, yeah, so-and-so said you're being an asshole, I'd be like, oh, wow, maybe I am really being an asshole.
Maybe I should reflect for a minute.
Yeah, I should take a moment because I respect that person and I really want to hear their side of it. And I have other people in my life that I think if somebody said, that guy said you're being an asshole, I'd be like, well, consider the source, you know? Look at that guy, you know? How big of a dick is he? You know, so whatever. I get what you're saying. What's going on with Daughters right now?
You know, John is up. You know, we're in the midst of moving here, so
right.
I didn't get to come back, but you know, John has flown home from Texas. John lives in Texas. He's a tour manager. It's his job.
Oh, he does? Who does he manage?
He's done several bands, but his primary band, he tour manages the Black Veil Brides.
No shit.
Yeah.
How about that?
Tour manager.
Okay.
So, you know, he when he's got an opening in the schedule, he can come home and we can rehearse and play and whatever. So right now he's in Providence and we're demoing some more. Doing some more demos. We've been demoing for years now, just passing things around.
Sure.
I think we're playing so much now that it seems like, you know, you can't kind of run this reunion circuit, for lack of a better term, because we didn't want to come off as this was like a reunion tour, because it's not
right
what we're doing. We weren't like cashing in. We're gonna do some big shows for a year and then we'll stop again, you know. We're kind of just ending this hiatus that, because little did I know that when I quit and I said, you know, fuck you guys, I'm all done, that the other three got together and said, let's just consider this like a sort of a hiatus and we'll figure this out down the line. Sure. Mm-hmm. Lex will, because I'm a bit erratic, you know, they thought, well, Lex will, you know, himself together and we'll do this right. again. So that was sort of the...
And they were right.
They were right, yeah. I mean, it took Andy Lowe had told Nick that I wanted to see him, and he told me that Nick wanted to see me. And so Nick and I kind of reluctantly got together and had dinner one night.
Really?
Yeah. So Andy Lowe is
Andy made that, like, he manufactured that whole thing?
Yeah. If not for Andy Lowe, you know, if not for Andy Lowe, Daughters wouldn't be anything. We would never have put out a record originally, and we would not be playing right now. We would not have gotten back together to do this. So.
Really?
Yeah. So Andy Lowe.
Are you being, like, he totally made that up?
Yeah,
like, Nick wants to hang out with you, and
that's
and...
what Nick told me. He said, Andy said he wanted to see me, and I said, well, fucking Andy told me he wanted to see me. Said, what the fuck is this? So,
well played, Andy.
Yeah, it was good. He did. It was a good thing. But we didn't. We were having dinner, I think, when that came up. It wasn't even, you know,
right.
So, but you know, it was good. I think Nick and I were back together talking for about 10 minutes before we were already decided we should start playing again. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. So. So we've always been, you know, writing, and we have a Dropbox. People will put stuff in there, and
uh-huh.
we'll talk about things and listen to things. We have a band group text thing. We'll just sort of chat about stuff and make really bad jokes. So we've been communicating about things for years now, and it's sort of it's just, you know, John's got a demanding job. It demands his time, and he travels quite a bit.
Right.
You know, he's got to go do that. So when he's available to do it, we're embracing the realization that we have to be better about our time, and we've got to do something more with it. And we've kind of been dragging our feet and on things, and it's time that we really kind of focus and set some dates and get into the studio to record things.
You guys have been playing. You said, I just missed the Philadelphia date. So, I mean, Daughters isn't, like, completely dead, right?
Right, of course. I mean, we've been playing quite a bit lately. You know, we've got... we did those shows in October. We did the two shows in New York, and then one in Philly, and then two in Boston. We had 10 days, I think, on the West Coast. We had Loma Prieta and The Body with us for West Coast shows.
Uh-huh.
And we went to... Houston in November. We played a festival down there, and we flew down there for, it's a pretty weird festival. It was cool. We saw Chelsea Wolfe and John Carpenter, and Bjork was doing something there, and it was like wild shit. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was cool. Aphex Twin played. Aphex Twin was his one show that he hasn't played in the United States in 15 years or something like that. So,
wow.
Or 10 years or something. Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool. It was they had a lot of like art installations and
uh-huh.
weird light show deals and kinds of fucking weird bands, so it was a lot of fun. So we're doing this festival in Calgary in a couple months, Sled okay. Island. That's King Woman and Converge, and a lot of cool people are playing.
Yay,
that
Converge.
Yeah. And we were doing some, we've got some Canadian shows early June. Shows in Canada, Detroit, and Cleveland, and some spots. So, just doing a little bit of this and that, and then we'll have some other stuff later this year, hopefully.
Right on.
We haven't announced yet. So.
Cool, man. I'm glad we got to talk, man. I really am. This matters. This matters to me.
I think it's you know, it's important to do, right? To communicate with people.
I love it. This is a good conversation, man. I like this. I like this.
I feel good about it.
clear.
As the Story Grows is a part of Lavera Productions.
High five. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook at As the Story Grows and visit the site at asthestorygrows.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show so you don't miss anything, and subscribe to my YouTube page so you can see unedited interviews. Visit the Bandcamp link in the notes of this show for free cover songs, some free tunes, and merch. If you like what you heard and would like to help, there's a Patreon link on every episode, or you can look for the dollar sign on the website for one-time donations. If you can't afford to donate, that's totally okay. Tell a friend, retweet me, and give me a good rating on iTunes. Send your guest requests and any feedback for the show to asthestorygrows@gmail.com, and thank you so much for listening today.